We all know what happened when a priest, a minister, and a rabbi walked into a bar, right? It happened. I mean, it frequently does. A priest, a minister, and a rabbi walked into a bar, and the bartender looked up and said, "What? Is this some kind of joke?" "Thank you very much. I play every Sunday here at 11 o'clock. But what happens when the Pope walks into a confessional? I mean, popes have traditionally offered confessions, but they don't typically do so in public. Now, that's exactly what Pope Francis did last Friday in front of a crowd of people gathered in St. Peter's Basilica for a penitential liturgy, a service of offering confession and receiving absolution. You see, instead of going, as he should have done, immediately to hear confessions after his homily, the Pope broke with tradition and protocol, as he has often done during the first year of his reign on the throne of Peter, and knelt down in front of one very surprised-looking priest and took 3 minutes to offer his own confession and to receive absolution. I don't know about you, but I would love to know what was the content of the Pope's confession. Did he admit to lying? Or perhaps more sensationally, to lust? Did he confess the sin of pride or presumption? Did he confess to being unmerciful or ungrateful? Exactly what sorts of sins a pope confesses, I would like to know. And I'd like to know because other people's sins are inherently fascinating. I know this because there is a glut of glossy magazines, glib TV shows, and glaring websites devoted to revealing the unseemly sides of the lives of celebrities and stars, the foibles of the rich and famous. We're generally too eager to read about Prince Harry's raunchy royal romps, or watch another Kardashian marriage implode live on national television, or find out who's cheating on who at a website called Rhymes with Snitch. It's real. I don't make up this stuff. You can look it up, but then you'll need to go to confession. Being obsessed with other people's sins is at least as old as the Bible itself. John tells us that Jesus and his disciples were taking a walk around Jerusalem. And as they did, they spotted a man who had been blind from birth. "Teacher," his disciples asked Jesus, "who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Since illness and physical disability were sometimes attributed to sin, naturally Jesus' disciples want to know who's to blame, who's at fault, what was the cause, where's the origin of this? Note that the disciples don't express sympathy for the man, nor outrage at his condition and the very real limitations that blindness imposed. Note that they didn't think to ask how they might be of help to the man, nor did they even think to ask his name. No, the disciples, our forebears in the faith, wanted to know who sinned and how to cause the man to be blind from birth. Imagine they thought up lots of inventive possibilities that ranged anywhere from his mother's sexual history to his father's violent past to even whatever sinful shenanigans babies can get up to in the womb. Because to them, it was entirely conceivable that the man who had been born blind had brought it on himself. Engaging in this sort of sordid moral discourse has a name. The gay community calls it throwing shade. Throwing shade means to criticize, to demean, to belittle, to insult someone for illegitimate behavior. It's a way of passing judgment on the sins of others in order to assure our own moral superiority. Unfortunately, as we've noted, religious people can raise throwing shade to the level of an art form. Because once the disciples have asked the question, who sinned, the question is one on everybody's mind. First the neighbors and then the Pharisees, that group of God's people who devoted themselves to studying and living out the law of Moses because it was the revealed will of God. And when the Pharisees learn that by restoring the blind man's sight, Jesus has violated the law by working on the Sabbath, the Pharisees start throwing shade on Jesus as well. People throw shade, of course, because we live in the dark. We live in the land of shadow. Now, the dark can be a scary place, filled as it is with unseen specters. But the dark can also be a safe place because of the cover it provides. No one can see the darkness of our own hearts except God Himself. No one can see the dark, shadowy places where greed and lust and pride abide. In the darkness fester hatred and jealousy and contempt and malice. In the darkness lurk our deepest fears. The fear that we're not smart enough or attractive enough, that we're not talented enough, that we don't earn enough. The fear that no one loves us, that we don't deserve the things we have, that it will all be taken away. From out of the shadows of insecurity and anxiety and fear, we throw shade like it was going out of style. Unfortunately, doing so is almost second nature to us. Earlier in his gospel, John wrote that the light has come into the world, and people loved darkness rather than light because their deeds were evil. For all those who do evil hate the light and do not come to the light so that their deeds may not be exposed. Now here, let me hasten to add that evil is not a moral category, but a theological one, referring to our failure to believe. We throw shade, judging, mocking, insulting, belittling, condemning others, fundamentally because we do not trust in God and in God's goodness. We cannot see God's light shining in the world, shining in others, even shining in ourselves. So although we don't think so, we are as good as blind. According to Barbara Brown Taylor, the problem with seeing the regular way is that sight naturally prefers outer appearances. It attends to the surface of things, which makes sight a superficial sense. We let our eyes skid over trees and furniture, traffic, faces, too often mistaking sight for perception, which is easy to do when our eyes work so well to help us orient ourselves in space. But she wonders how seeing the regular way has in fact made us blind by giving us cheap confidence that one quick glance at things can tell us what we need to know, what those things are, by fooling us into thinking that we have a clear view of how things really are, of where the road leads, of who can see rightly and who cannot. But in fact, we're often blind. So focused are we on the sins of others, so interested are we in the sins of others, that we're often blinded to the work that God is doing. Over and over again, the Gospels affirm that God sent Jesus into the world to open the eyes of the blind. Not only eyes that could not see physically, but eyes that too often cannot see spiritually. God sent Jesus into the world to restore our capacity to believe and to understand and to trust in the good things God is doing to make the world right. God sent Jesus into the world to enable us to see one another not simply as sinner, disabled, broken, wrong, but as son or daughter, as friend and neighbor, indeed, as child of God. Just as Jesus sent the man born blind to a pool called Sent, there to wash and so to see, God sends us to be washed in the waters of baptism, to have our eyes opened to the goodness of God that is present in the world, in others, and in ourselves. And God sends us into the world to bear light to that world, the light of God's truth, the light of God's beauty, the light of God's mercy, the light of God's healing. May God open our eyes that we may see.